back with more of Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Greg Koch has been a staple on the Milwaukee music scene for years, and except for short stints away at college in Stevens Point and Minneapolis, this has always been his home, and fans here have always appreciated his virtuosity.
People in the guitar world consider him virtually a genius, which has led him to gigs with Fender Guitars, with Hal Leonard, and with Steve Vai's label, Favored Nations. Koch will play tonight as part of a group performing at Tosa Tonight in Wauwatosa, but he joined us first and offered up an original tune called Night Owl Now.
Something like that.
That was terrific. Greg Koch, welcome to Lake Effect. Fantastic.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, my goodness. Been trying to do this for ages and so glad we finally made it work. So let's start with the guitar itself. When did you pick it up and why?
I started when I was 12, but I was fascinated by guitar a lot earlier than that. And I always tell the story of the fact that I'm the youngest of seven kids. And my brother was the oldest, I was the youngest, and there were five girls in between. So I had to room with my brother, which I'm sure was a source of joy for him. But he was 14 years my senior, so all of his music I was exposed to. His high school ages were, I think he was in high school from 66 to 1970. So it was Hendrix, it was Cream, it was, of course, Beatles and Stones. It was Hendrix, it was Cream, James Gang, and then it was Hendrix and Cream. It was a power trio vibe going on in that bedroom. And so I grew up listening to that stuff, and I was a huge Hendrix fan. I did a report on Jimi Hendrix, and I was in third grade. I remember vehemently arguing with the teacher, who was like, he was a drug addict. I was like, now let's be clear. He died from barbiturate intoxication, which is basically the same thing that Marilyn Monroe did. So I was really up on all the minutiae of who played where, what, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I tried playing cello. I really wanted to play guitar. I remember trying to, you know, learn Hendrix songs on the cello. That didn't go well. And then I tried playing a percussion kit, and that was okay, but I really wanted to play guitar. So when I was 12 years old, a friend of one of my older sisters had a guitar that she never used, and she let me use it. And the guy across the street showed me a couple of chords, and I figured out every tune I possibly could using these two chords. And I said to my dad, hey, I really want to take lessons. And you can imagine after the foiled cello experiment and percussion kit and whatnottery, he was not exactly brimming with enthusiasm to be indulging in another financial
outlay. For,
indeed.
Yes.
But luckily, I had a handy Sentinel account, or a Sentinel route. And I saved up money. And after I used that gal's guitar, I bought a guitar. And my dad was a lawyer, and he had one of his clients was a guy that played in the Steve Swedish Orchestra, which, of course, played at all the sports shows and weddings and all this kind of stuff. And he was really a bass player, but he played some guitar and he played mandolin and tenor banjo and all this kind of stuff. So I took lessons, and my dad told me, he goes, the minute this kid is not prepared, this all ends. So I, you know, made sure I was prepared every week, and I would just kind of go through the lesson book for about a half hour every day so my mom could hear me playing Mary Had a Little Lamb or whatnot. And then I was back at the record player figuring out Hendrix and Cream.
So you were dropping the needle
learning.
Learning the licks.
Exactly.
And
so after about 6 months, the guy came back to my dad and said, you know what, I can't teach him anymore. So I was like, well, excellent. So then I moved on to my next guy and just kind of kept – I did my first gig after 9 months of playing. And it just never stopped from there. I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. And once I actually started playing, there was literally no other option for me. I mean, I let school slide. You know, I wasn't into sports. You know, it was music all the time.
Did you end up touring and doing the whole rock and roll lifestyle as a young man?
I did to an extent. You know, I did go to school for music. I went to University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. And which at the time, actually, I think it's still a pretty good jazz department. But at the time, what made it unique was it was the only place in the state where you could get an accredited degree in jazz guitar. And the guy who was running the entire jazz department was a guitar player, which was very unusual. Usually it's a horn player or a keyboard player who hates guitar players. And the only acceptable guitar player is one that's playing a big Gibson or some kind of jazz box with
hollow body with
flat wound strings and plays through a polytone amp and doesn't bend strings. So that wasn't me. So luckily, this gentleman, his name is Mike Irish, who ran the department. I had had exposure to him. I went to a summer camp when I was in high school up to Shell Lake, Wisconsin. And I was playing a Telecaster, and I came in, and I was doing my blues thing, and I had kind of the chicken picking thing started, and I knew a little bit, enough jazz to get me in trouble, you know. And he just kind of opened my whole mind up to, like, hey, if you know, there's some guys that are really good blues players that actually play cool jazz, too, and he turned me on to Robin Ford and Larry Carlton, these types of guys. So that really kind of introduced me to a whole different thing. So when I found out he was actually teaching at University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, I ended up going there. So I went there for 4 years. And I was up in Minneapolis for a little while, and then I ended up coming back home, and I started my own band, you know, Greg Kalk and the Tone Controls. I played with Susan Julian prior to that. She had just come off the road with the Bodines after their tour with U2, and she was a great singer and wrote great tunes, and there was a lot of buzz about her, you know, kind of following in the footsteps with the same management and so on and so forth. So I played in her band for about a year and just kind of figured out that I always wanted to have my own band. I have to say I do play well with others. I know when to support, but I want to play my own music and want to do my own thing. So I started my band, and we just hit it as hard as we could and started to get some, you know, some national attention. But kind of the Fender thing kind of came to the fore. A guy was in town who was representative of Fender Musical Instruments from Scottsdale, the home office. Actually, two guys came within 2 days. And one guy came out and saw my band and was like, we got to get you written up in this Fender Frontline magazine, yada, yada, yada.
I'm assuming you were using Fender and
I was.
You were playing a
yes.
Fender at that point.
Yes.
Because what you have right now is a Gibson.
That is correct.
Today.
I do like to sample of the forbidden fruit
okay.
every now and again.
All right.
Especially this Crimson Harlot.
It is a gorgeous instrument. There will be a picture on the website.
Excellent.
Yes.
But anyway, so this guy came into town and heard the band and said, we got to get you written up. And then 2 days later, another guy came in. His name is Jack Schwartz, and he heard the band. He loved the whole aspect of the band because the original lineup of the band, who I'm actually playing with again, we just put out a DVD of running a bunch of the old songs live in the studio, and people really liked this band. We played a ton around the area, and it was a power trio. And it was jammy, but it was more song-oriented. You know, good harmonies, and the songs were an amalgamation of all the influences. So I kind of refer to it, for lack of a better term, as kind of just a little bit more sinuous Little Feet type of a thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, so it had all these, you know, different blues, funk, jazz, you know, New Orleans-y type of implications.
But with that incredible technique, because that's one of the things that Little Feet really stuck out with, was the fact that they could all play
yes.
like madmen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly correct. So that was kind of our thing, but it was also kind of a stumbling block for us because, you know, the blues guys were like, well, you're not blues. And the rock people were like, well, you're too blues for this. And so it was that age-old thing. But one place where that was totally embraced was the land of the guitar mutant. You know what I mean? They're like, that is all cool stuff. So Fender, when they heard our first CD, was like, hey, we really like that, but is there anything that could kind of showcase your guitar playing a little bit more? Even though I thought it did, but they really wanted a little bit more, shall we say, more than just one chorus of soloing or, you know, whatever. So I came out with a record. Our first CD came out in 93. The second one came out in 94. And that was a record I did called Strat's Got Your Tongue. And that one really kind of helped us elevate to more of a national situation. Fender had us play this big show down in Nashville, and that kind of reverberated all over the place. So all these dealers, music dealers all over the country, were asking us to come and do performances or me to do clinics at their stores. And, you know, by that time, I already had a couple of kids. So the idea of, well, let's see, do I want to go out and do stuff for the biggest guitar manufacturer on earth and make really good money and be treated great? and help support two kids that I already have at home, or do I want to still slug it out in the clubs, you know, get in the back of a Ford Econoline and and probably get divorced and my kids end up on Montel or whatever equivalent show there is. And so I started doing more of that Fender stuff. And then right around the same time, Hal Leonard approached me about doing a bunch of instructional material and so on and so forth. And so that aspect of things kind of ballooned more. But it was always predicated on me putting out records. You know, I'd put out records, but instead of touring in the conventional sense, I would do clinics. Although a lot of the times the clinics would be full band clinics.
So you'd bring the whole band?
Bring the whole band. Okay. We'd go into a store. They'd have like a little venue set up. We would perform, but then we'd also go, well, I'm using this thing here to help me get that sound. Inevitably, people would say, well, what are you doing with your chicken picking thing? And so I put together this thing where it was fun. You could hear some music. You got some techniques. You learned how to get some good sounds. Fender was pleased because stuff sold in the wake. Hal Leonard was pleased because all the books and the DVDs sold. And I was pleased because I got paid to play my guitar. So then on down the line, you know, I got some different record deals and then started touring with the band more. But in a day and age when, you know, everyone complains, and rightfully so, I mean, the old paradigm about the music industry is gone. Obviously, I think everyone knows that. But I've never done better than I'm doing right now. But I'm doing things that I never would have dreamed that would be the case. You know what I mean? It was just
like it was what's part of your music making wasn't something you imagined was going to be part of your music making.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. One of the things that came up was this there's this big guitar dealer out in Boulder County, Colorado, a little town called Louisville, Colorado. He himself is a great guitar player, great musician, and was fairly successful as a musician, had his own band. It was this band called Wind Machine, and they were very popular in the adult contemporary kind of instrumental, cool, acoustic-y stuff. And at one point, he always had this music store, but he decided that he was going to ratchet it up a little bit. And so he used his knowledge of cool, you know, the minutiae of what goes into the old guitars. A lot of times the manufacturers that even they're bearing the name of the history of the instrument, but a lot of times they don't do them exactly like they were back in the day, right? So he started special ordering guitars from Fender and special ordering from Gibson and from, you know, Taylor and so on and so forth. And they would be co-branded, like, you know, the Wildwood Spec Les Paul, that's what this is, or a Wildwood 10 Stratocaster from the Fender Custom Shop. Anyway, so he had his business just took off. It's this little music store. You know, you walk in, there's like 30 guitars on the wall, but there's 4,000 or 5,000 in the back of these very specialized high-end guitars. And his thought was, well, if I could get guys to come in from the different manufacturers and play these guitars, like do a little mini concert on this guitar, kind of going through a bunch of different styles, a bunch of different sounds with distortion, without distortion, you know,
what you can do with this instrument.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And because he might have, like with this particular instrument, he might have 10 of these in the same color, same year, same, you know, everything. Every guitar sounds a little different. So his vision was to have the different manufacturers supply different people to come in and to just play all the different guitars, and then someone could go online, in addition to seeing the instrument, could also hear the instrument. So Fender called me up and said, hey, Steve wants to fly you out to Wildwood. Steve's going to pay you directly. We'll pay for your flights, yada, yada. I said, fine. So I went out there. I went in, and he told me his vision. He's like, look, I just want you to play for about 5 minutes on each guitar. You know, go through every pickup selection, do a bunch of different styles and different sounds. I said, okay. So I did it. I did one of them. And after I got done, he stood up and came up and goes, can I hire you to do this? I go, what do you mean? He goes, I'll fly you out here every month to do these videos. I said, you mean kind of like a job? And he goes, yeah. So I said, of course. You know, because all the years I did the Fender thing, I was always an independent contractor. The stuff I had to juggle with Fender USA, Fender Australia, different people in Europe, it was all the same brand, but I had different contacts. So I was always juggling. There were never any guarantees.
Right.
You know? And so I'm thinking, wait a minute, this guy in Louisville, Colorado is going to guarantee me this? So 4 years later, and 4,500 videos and 18 million views, it's gone absolutely crazy. So I go out there every month. I go out there for 4 days. And at first I was just doing Fenders, but then he's like, you know, how do you like these Gibsons? I said, I've always had Gibsons. So next thing you know, I started doing the Gibsons and all of his other high-end guitars. The people that watch these, it's all the years that I've done all the different stuff from the magazine articles, and I had columns in different guitar magazines, and I was on Steve Vai's record label, and yada, yada, yada. It just absolutely pales in comparison to what these videos have done.
Before we get into the next song, yes. I'm going to ask you to do a little mini instructional thing for me here. Show me what this guitar can do in the manner that you might put that video together.
Now, usually I would have a little bit of distortion that I would go into at some point, but I can't do that without making us deaf at this particular point in time. All right, so I'll just pretend like I'm doing one. So usually what I do is I start off playing on the neck pickup. The neck pickup on all guitars is going to be a little darker sounding. It's going to have more of that kind of jazzier tone, and especially on a Les Paul, it's kind of known for being kind of a beefy specimen. So I'll start off on this neck pickup and just kind of do a bunch of different stuff.
Okay,
so.
You know, there's about 12 guitar players' styles that I just heard in there.
Well, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little Jimmy, a little Chet, a little Wes, a little Albert King.
A little Pat Metheny, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a little bit in there.
Yep.
I can see why people love them.
Well, it's fun.
Yeah. And it's like, wow, the guitar can do that.
Exactly.
You know, assuming that the player can do that, too. You know, you have to,
Well, that's one of the things is that I have no problem showing I'm not real proprietary when it comes. You know, a lot of people, you know, they'll have their things that they do on the instrument, and they don't want people to know that. And I can see that. I mean, you work to have an arsenal of stuff that is your brand, I suppose, as an instrumentalist, and you don't want – and you're protective of the fact that you don't want people just taking it. But my motto is that I just enjoy doing it all. And if somebody wants to learn it and do it, they can do it. I'll just make more because I have no friends. I have nothing better to do. So, I will just caffeinate heavily and it'll force me to learn more things. Although I have to say it's getting a little strange when I go to, I was just in, Dallas for this Dallas guitar show and you walk around and all of a sudden I'll hear one of my things being played in a booth. And I'm like, Hey. But it's flattering, but it's weird.
Greg, it has been such an honor and a pleasure having you in the studio. Great to hear the stories. I know there are many more, but I want to hear some more music.
All right.
To take us out with. So what are you gonna do?
Well, I suppose I should sing one. I do sing.
Okay.
Which is interesting because I've never wanted to sing. And it was just one of those things where I was like, well, if I don't sing, I'm not going to have – I'll be, always be beholden to a singer. You know what I mean? And so I started singing. I started to enjoy it, and I always just – I sing blues type of stuff. I could do ballady stuff, and I can do humorous lyrics actually quite well. But there's a lot of stuff vocally I won't wear on my sleeve. You know what I mean? It's just not me. So usually I always have a ringer in the band. So with my original lineup with Gary Kaler's drummer, he sings – first of all, as a musician, he's just – He's really an extraordinary guy, but he's very laid back and very quiet, so you would never know it. But, I mean, talent-wise, and I know a lot of people use that word, oh, he's so talented. But there's a guy whose voice is, you know, and I hate to use comparisons, but, you know, a lot of people hear him and they think he sounds like kind of a Don Henley type of a voice. But he's got this kind of high tenor, really beautiful voice. Can bring the gravel when need be, can do a country tune, can do a blues tune. He plays great guitar, and he's a drumming fool. And so now that I'm playing with the band again, he's playing drums and singing, and then the bass player has a nice high harmony voice, and so a lot of times we'll all sing together. But this particular tune is a blues tune that is very B.B. King-oriented. It was kind of funny. I downloaded this song, or this record I used to have the vinyl of called There's Gotta Be a Better World Somewhere, this B.B. King record. And as I'm listening to it, I was like, oh my God, I totally stole that progression from B.B. King. But, you know, as you do. But anyway, there's a song called Too Broke. And it's called Stranded, Betrayed, and Too Broke to Drink You Off of My Mind. So I go like that.
Greg Kock will perform this evening with John Seeger at Tosa Tonight at Wauwatosa's Hart Park. He'll play with his newly reformed band, The Tone Controls, later this summer. You can hear another song that Greg played for us at our website, wuwm.com, and our interview was engineered by John Strelecki.
Some said you were low down, others called you mean. But from where I was standing, well, none of those traits could be seen. Each time I fall,